Well, thank you. My name is Paul Branscombe. I'm an assistant professor from the University of Oklahoma. I've been there for a few years in the health promotion side of our department. So this seems kind of loud. I'm going to put this back a little bit. Okay. Well, I want to thank everyone for coming out today and listening to some of the research that I've been up to. This slide just says I have no relationship to disclose. And the title of my presentation today is Using the Integrative Model to Predict Physical and Sedentary Activities of Elementary Children. My co-author, Mike Carlson, couldn't be here. He helped me with a lot of the statistics. So as I'm sure we're all aware of, physical activity is a big public health issue. Physical activity has been associated with prevention of childhood obesity. Currently, about a third of our kids are considered overweight, and about a sixth are considered obese. Physical activity has also been associated with inflammatory markers. That's been causative with cardiovascular disease, improved insulin sensitivity. That's useful with type 2 diabetes prevention. Also been protective of certain types of cancer, like breast cancer and colorectal cancer. However, given the benefits of physical activity, we know that people aren't very active. If you were to actually look across the lifespan from children to adolescents to adulthood, about 42% of kids are meeting physical activity recommendations. About 8% of adolescents are meeting those recommendations, and only about 5% of adults meet those recommendations. Therefore, there is a big need for health promotion interventions or lifestyle interventions, and given the nature of this session theory, definitely we need good theory-based approaches. I mean, there's nothing as practical as a good theory. So theories are very critical for planning, implementing, and evaluating health promotion programs. There's a number of theoretical perspectives. I teach a theory class back in Oklahoma, and it's kind of funny each year, but halfway through the semester, my students come to me and say, you know, we're learning about all these theories, health belief model, trans-theoretical model. Can't we just learn like one theory that covers it all, and then we'll just be done, right? We'll have one theory for this class, and that will be great. And I kind of laugh, but that actually was done. We actually did integrate a number of these theories, or a number of theorists integrated a number of these theories in 1991. So in 1991, there was a theorist workshop where the following theorists attended, representing the following theories. So I have Bandura of social cognitive theory, Marshall Becker of health belief model, Martin Fishbaum of theory of reasoned action, Frederick Canfer, theories of self-regulation, self-control that he did, Harry Triandis, the theories of subjective culture and interpersonal relationships. And they had this workshop that was sponsored by the National Institute of Mental Health to essentially talk about their theories in the perspective of HIV/AIDS prevention. So it was a three-day workshop. They got up, they talked about their theories, the concepts of their theories, they operationalized the constructs of their theories towards this research, towards HIV/AIDS prevention. And the results from this workshop led to development of the integrative model, or the integrative theoretical framework, which looks a lot like this. Essentially, what it says is that behavior is predicted by three main constructs. You have environmental factors, so it could be social, could be physical. Thinking about like barriers that might prevent you from doing the behavior, your intentions to engage in that behavior, so your readiness to change, and certain skills and abilities. So for some behaviors, there are certain skills or certain abilities that one must possess to actually engage in that behavior. Furthermore, what predicts intentions? So if it's a condition like physical activity where there's no environmental factors that's preventing you from being active, you have the skills and abilities to be active, then the main primary determinant of your behavior would be your intentions to be active. And what shapes your intentions to be any behavior is your attitudes, your perceived norms, and your self-efficacy or perceived behavioral control. Essentially, it's who you ask is what they call it, right? Ike Gajon still likes to call this perceived behavioral control, but essentially he's said that they're essentially the same construct when you look at how you measure them. So essentially, you know, attitudes are is your overall assessment of the behavior. So for physical activity, you know, what are the advantages, what are the disadvantages of the behavior? Perceived norms actually was changed from subjective norms. So if you're familiar with theory of planned behavior, you're probably familiar with the construct of subjective norms, which is your perception of how the most important people in your life thinks that you should behave. So for physical activity with children, you could say their subjective norms would be their perceptions of, like, does their mom want them to be active? Or does their dad want them to be active? So important people in your life. Those have been kind of renamed injunctive norms, and they've also added descriptive norms to this construct to be perceived norms. And descriptive norms is about the normative pressure that you feel people like you should be doing this behavior. So for kids, it's, you know, kids my age should be active. That's something that would be normal for kids my age to be doing. So it's another type of norm that they've updated. And then self-efficacy, essentially, you know, your confidence to engage in the behavior, even under times where that might be difficult. So we all know that with these theories, we can add a lot of constructs, and there's really an unlimited amount of constructs that we could kind of have in these theories. So the way that they've kind of dealt with this is say, these are the main constructs, but from behavior to behavior, it may be important that there are some background influences. For example, yesterday I gave a presentation on the theory of planned behavior and how that was different from boys and girls predicting snacking. And I found that gender was a very important background influence in the utilization of that theory. So what they kind of talk about is that there could be important background influences from behavior to behavior, from group to group. So those are kind of important to identify for your level of research. So despite its development over 20 years ago, this model really hasn't been used much. It hasn't been systematically tested much. And so that kind of led us to this study. The purpose was to test the integrative model using structural equation modeling procedures with regards to physical and sedentary activities. So our study was cross-sectional by design with a convenient sample of third, fourth, and fifth grade kids out in the Midwest in Oklahoma, like I said, where I was from. We evaluated physical and sedentary activities with these two items. You know, yesterday, how long were you active? That made your heart beat fast, made you breathe hard. They were given 15-minute increments of 0, 15 minutes, 30 minutes. And we asked them about before, during, and after school times. Same thing with sedentary activities. And then we went and we tried to measure each of the constructs the best we could. So the predictors of behavior, intention, skills, and abilities, and environment. We measured intentions using three items. This is an example of one of those items. I intend to be active. Every day I intend to be active. And they were told that being active meant that they were actually active for 60 minutes. So it gave them that time context. Skills and abilities and environments, we evaluated through a proxy measure of asking their perceptions of their skills and then their perception about the outside weather and whether or not weather impacted their being active. And then attitudes, norms, and self-efficacy were all evaluated by a number of items. Perceived norms was evaluated by a mix of injunctive and descriptive norms, and you can see these examples. And if you're interested in the survey itself, please come to me and I'll give you my card and I'll email that to you. Two of the background factors that we wanted to look at were mood and past behavior, because I'm sure we're all kind of familiar with that past behavior is really the best predictor of future behavior. And two important elements of past behavior we were interested in was whether or not they were involved with sports teams and whether or not they had been involved in other health promotion programs that promoted physical activity. So in other words, let me just go back one second. How these background factors work is that they work through attitudes, norms, and perceived behavioral control. So these background influences shape your attitudes, norms, and control beliefs to then shape your intentions, which might shape your behavior. So let me just go back through here. So we meticulously tried to make this a valid and reliable instrument. We first created the instrument and sent it to a panel of six experts, different areas of expertise, experts in instrument development, experts in physical activity assessment, experts in child development to see if the items were items that kids could read very easily. That was a two-round review process to establish face and content validity. Then we gave the survey, we tested the internal consistency reliability, and all the subscales were tested as long as they had more than one item. And all of them were ranged from 0.7 to 0.85, so within acceptable limits. We looked at test-retest reliability with a subsample of about 35 kids. So they took it, and then 2 weeks later, they took the test again to see if it had that test-retest. And it ranged from 0.63 to 0.85. So one of the scales was 0.63. That's outside of the 0.7 correlation that we like to see between the two time points. But given that it was a newer instrument and it was pretty close, we kept it in there. And then we did construct validity using structural equation modeling, and these were our fit indices. So we had about 264 children take our survey, mixed boys and girls. Average age was about 9 years. I was mostly Caucasian, but some other races and ethnicities represented as well. Excuse me. I'm just going to skip this slide because I want to get to the main part. This was our hypothesized model. So you can kind of see it's very similar to the model that I kind of showed you. And essentially what we had was weather, intentions, and skills, predicting both sedentary and physical activity. We had attitudes, norms, and self-efficacy, predicting intentions. And we had the past behavior represented by sports and programs and mood, predicting attitudes, norms, and self-efficacy. And what's really nice about structural equation modeling is that you can test the model as a whole. So instead of kind of chunking it up like with a normal analysis, we might take, you know, weather, intentions, and skills and predict a behavior at a time. Structural equation modeling helps us to kind of do an omnibus test, kind of test it all at once. So that was our first figure, figure A, and actually our data did not fit this model very well. So we went through a number of model respecifications to come up with a model that did fit our data. None of the relationships that we saw, you know, we didn't have to reverse the relationship of any of the variables that we saw. Really, what that respecification process meant was that we deleted some of the non-significant variables. We created paths from variables to other variables that were significant. We got rid of paths that were not significant. And this was essentially the model that we came up with. So intentions and self-efficacy predicted physical activity very well. Attitudes and norms predicted sedentary activity very well. Attitudes, norms, and self-efficacy predicted intentions very well. And the summary of our results show that about 20% of the variance of physical activity was explained by intentions and self-efficacy. About 10% of the variance of sedentary activities was explained by attitudes and norms, and that was a negative relationship. So in other words, if they had positive attitudes towards physical activity, they were less likely to be sedentary. Intentions, about 62% of the variance of intentions was explained by self-efficacy, attitudes, and norms. Furthermore, self-efficacy, the variance of that was explained by mood and the participation in past behaviors. The same with norms, a little less the variance. And with attitudes, the health promotion program participation was not significant, so we took that path out. And the skills and abilities and weather constructs were not significant in this model. And we'll talk about why that might be. So, discussion real quick. Do I have 5 minutes? Okay. So, real quick, what we found was very similar. So, recently there was a meta-analysis published on theory of planned behavior, and they really did a lot of good work kind of showing, you know, are there differences in theory of planned behavior? Because when you look at the integrative model, it is very similar to the theory of planned behavior, with adding kind of a couple of new things to it. So really, when you look at physical activity among children, what this meta-analysis found was that intentions and perceived behavioral control predict about 22% of the variance of this behavior among this group. And what we found was that intentions and perceived behavioral control, or self-efficacy, whatever you want to call it, predicts about 20% of the variance. In the meta-analysis, they also mentioned that for this behavior, attitudes, control, and norms predict about 46% of the variance of intentions and for physical activity. But in our study, we had about 62% of the variance for physical activity intentions. So we definitely saw an increase. One reason for that increase might be the fact that we tapped into that new type of descriptive norm. So whereas with theory of planned behavior, again, they're only looking at the subjective norms, we tapped into that new type of norm, the descriptive and subjective, and got more percent of the variance, we believe, is how that result came to be. Skills and abilities, environment, constructs were not significant. You know, when you think theoretically about this model, it does make sense that people do have to have certain skills to engage in a behavior, and the environment has to be right for someone to engage in a behavior. However, these two constructs have not really been well developed in this model. I mean, like I said, when looking at different, you know, other applications of this model, really there's not that many out there. There's one really good one Eric Buhai did at South Florida with predicting sexual abstinence using this model. But even in that situation, he didn't evaluate skills. Because, you know, to think about evaluating real skills, how do you evaluate skillfulness? You know, that would be an objective measure. To think about doing that with 264 children would be very difficult. And the same goes for environment. You know, here we asked about weather. You know, research does show that weather conditions affect children's physical activity and whether or not they're going to be physically active. Here we asked about their perception of whether or not weather would be a barrier. To really evaluate this environmental construct would require, you know, naturalistic observations of the environment and how that might relate to behavior. So more work definitely needs to be done with this model, especially with these two constructs, to see, can proxy measures be representative of the real measures, or do we need to create real skills measures or real environmental measures and add that to the model? But in conclusion, what we found was that integrating strategies to enhance intentions and self-efficacy are essential for physical activity promotion. Enhancing attitudes and norms seems to be essential for decreasing sedentary activities. And furthermore, participation in sports and athletic activities really appears to impact children's attitudes, norms, and self-efficacy. So something to promote and look for. So we were also able to better answer our research questions by utilizing structural equation modeling, by being able to look at the entire model at once instead of kind of doing it by a piecemeal fashion, is really advantageous. Very few applications of integrative model. So I hope that, you know, with Eric Buhai's and this and in the future, we can start to develop more evidence around this model, and hopefully this model starts to become a little bit more popular. It was just introduced in the new Glanz book, or new, 2008 was when it was published, but it's in the Glanz book. It's starting to become in a lot of theory textbooks. However, when they talk about this, they really only talk about it from a theoretical perspective and don't have a lot of good application examples to talk about. So hopefully this kind of leads to that. So that's all I have. Thank you. Perfect.